And anyways, the Six Nations Reserve put together this absolutely ridiculous land claim on this subdivision, which was, you know, this 450-house subdivision that was in the midst of being constructed. No level of government thought there was any merit to this land claim. It went nowhere in the court. Then the natives just violently occupied the subdivision. They riotously attacked the police. And then the Ontario Provincial Police, in their wisdom, placed a Mohawk in charge of the policing. This is a person who had known contacts with the Mohawk Warrior Society, which is recognized as a criminal enterprise on both sides of the border. And it's a major tobacco smuggling enterprise. And he proceeded to turn the police around. So all they did was support the Indians against the locals. There were riots on a weekly basis in this town, sometimes involving as many as 3,000 people. Ultimately, the Indians set up blockades right through the middle of the town. And they demanded to physically search any white person going through the blockades. And this was quite often, you know, drunk Indians at, midnight demanding to, physically body search women. A lot of women ended up sleeping in their cars, sleeping at friends' places to avoid going through this blockade at certain times of the night. There was, numerous examples chronicled in this book of white people being physically beaten up with half a dozen police officers standing 10 paces away. On one occasion, two journalists from a television station were beaten up and had their tape stolen out of their camera. One of them was left with a giant gash on the top of his head. There was half a dozen cops watched this happen. When it was over, one of the cops walked over and told him to sue our police force, sue the Ontario Provincial Police Force, because we are being told not to intervene when any Native activity like this. And this is not a made-up story. I recall following this in some news media while it was happening. But it was a clear example at very high levels in the police departments. They're being infiltrated or co-opted or whatever, so that the order coming down the line is not to interfere in these Native protests. And we're seeing it again. About 2 weeks ago, Natives, there's about, at most there was 15, usually 6 of them, blocking a major rail line into the city of Sarnia. That branch line fed a number of chemical plants, propane plants, what have you, that were vital to the economy of the area. And the owners of the railway, the Canadian National Railway Company, sent their lawyers to court. They got a court injunction to have the police remove those people from the tracks, and the police refused to obey the injunction. And they went back to court again. We don't have subpoenas in Canada. We have summonses. The judge summoned the chief of police to his courtroom. He wanted to go eyeball to eyeball with him and say, why are you not enforcing my orders? Eventually, after about 2 weeks of non-enforcement of a court order, they took the barricade down, and the chief of police of Sarnia helped the natives fold their flag and participated in their ceremonies when they took the blockade down. That has happened several times in Canada in the last 2 weeks where there's been these ridiculous blockades of railways or highways, and usually there's not that many people there. It wouldn't be a major policing operation just to arrest them, but the police don't do anything. They just stand there. And this is infuriating Canadians, non-Native Canadians. In fact, the judge who issued that order then went public, and his final words is, I don't get it. You don't need a judge's order to get people off a main rail line. That is a crime in progress. It reminds me a lot of the Occupy movement. You will recall you had Occupy in the States.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right. Quite often they were on private property or they were trespassing on public property, and the police are standing around. And a lot of citizens in Canada, the United States, say, why don't you simply remove these people from the park? Why don't you remove them from the street? And for some reason, you're talking to a stone wall when you talk to the police in those settings. And this is really happening in Canada. And there's one little video clip I think you guys downloaded of a woman just driving right through one of these blockades. And if the police weren't there, people would be going through these human blockades at 120 miles an hour. Most of the non-Native population are furious, and there's probably been about 50 mainstream media articles in the last 2 weeks complaining about police passivity. In Alberta, the province I'm in right now, the justice minister recently came out and said, you know, his quote was, "I am pissed off at the police because they're not doing anything." In Alberta, we don't have a provincial police. We've just got city polices, and then we've got the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and they are notorious for siding with the Indians. In fact, that whole police force was created to protect the Indians from the settlers. And that seems to live on. But what it really is in very high levels of government, they've been co-opted. They support the movement. They support the environmental movement. They support the efforts to convert the Aboriginals into an auxiliary for the environmental movement. And that is why there's such a potential for violence. Mm-hmm. And it ultimately, you know, they're threatening now. There's a chief who's basically a professional environmentalist who's threatening to block what's Highway 63, which separates, well, you've heard of the oil sands, the tar sands. That's their main highway. He's threatening to blockade that.
Hey, William, I've got a quick question before we go to break. If you look at the numbers, the environmental movement teaming up with the Native Americans, what percentage of the population are they in the country of Canada?
Canada?
Yeah.
Aboriginals, all those who self-identify as Aboriginals come to 3.9%, below 4% of the total population.
Again, it's the minorities.
This is a minority.
Mathematical minorities. Exactly.
Yeah, they are one in about 33 of the population. And that's why it's such a big joke, because they're always threatening violence. Huh. If it was a real war, it would be the shortest war in history.
Yeah.
But they're getting away with it because they're basically being protected by the police. Like a lot of these blockades, 6 Aboriginals on the highway, 20 police cars. People would just drive right over them if the police weren't there. And the police will give advance notice that the highway is being closed. They reroute traffic around the blockade. They're facilitating these blockades. In their line is they don't want to see any violence.
It is like Occupy. All right, we've got to take a little break here and listen to some news. You can catch up on some American news, William. We'll be back with William Kay here at We the People Radio. 5 minutes. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. Everything you claim to be was a lie. Why'd you lie to me? You've been creeping, sneaking, secret with another. It's a good time to leave, so bye. KCNR, Shasta Redding.
News Radio, I'm Sal Chiangrasso. President Obama's second term officially starts now.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
The official swearing in by Chief Justice John Roberts taking place in the Blue Room at the White House. Earlier this morning, Vice President Joe Biden sworn in by U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Joe Biden took the oath of office this morning at the vice presidential residence at the U.S. Naval Observatory using the 120-year-old Biden family Bible.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor doing the honors. The oath was done early to accommodate her schedule. She's due in New York this afternoon for a book signing.
So I apologize. We're going to walk out. Her car is waiting so she can catch a train. I hope I haven't caused her to miss.
That report from Fox Radio's Mike Makowicz. The ceremonial swearing-in, inaugural address, traditional parade, and inaugural balls all set for tomorrow. The president's senior advisor, David Plouffe, says he will talk about compromise in his inaugural address.
He's going to talk about how the American people, if they're not engaged in these debates and pushing Washington, progress and change won't happen.
But as President Obama's second term gets underway, Missouri Senator Roy Blunt, a Republican, says his leadership skills have been lacking.
The greater historic argument would be that he hasn't really done much to advance a specific agenda. He speaks in general terms. He likes the executive order approach a whole lot better than the legislative approach. And you really can't get all that far with executive orders. You've got to legislate, and you've got to legislate realistically.
Both Plouffe and Blunt appeared on Fox News Sunday. An Algerian security official tells the AP numerous additional bodies, as many as 25, were found at that gas refinery today. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
When you're on the go and need to know, it's Fox News Radio, live, anytime, any place. And it's as easy as foxnewsradio.com. Listen to the most recent newscast or your favorite Fox Talk personalities. Just go to foxnewsradio.com or download the Fox News Channel app for news, video, weather, and Fox News Talk from one app on iPhone, iPad, Android, Windows Phone, and more. Go to foxnews.com/mobile. Stay connected to Fox News and Fox News Radio.
You want to know about the stories beyond the headlines? Politics, pop culture, barbecue contests, and cornbread festivals, and the general lack of common sense in almost everything these days? Well, I'm Todd Starnes, host of Fox News and Commentary. I shop at Walmart, go to church on Sunday. Also something of an odd duck. But isn't that what makes life fun? Check it all out at ToddStarnes.com. You never know what you'll find. ToddStarnes.com.
After his Oprah Winfrey interview, if you want to hear further explanation from disgraced cyclist Lance Armstrong, you may not.
Armstrong was criticized for not revealing any details to Oprah about his use of performance-enhancing drugs. She was criticized for not pressing harder. Anti-doping agency officials want him to reveal more. But Armstrong, reached by email while on vacation in Hawaii, tells the New York Times that it's highly unlikely he'll speak to the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, but he wrote, anything is possible. The Times reports that it's more likely Armstrong would speak to a reconciliation commission, which could offer lenient sanctions for truthful confessions from pro bike riders.
Fox News Radio, Steve Knight. The makers of the BlackBerry are hoping some new products will lure some more smartphone buyers.
The stakes keep getting higher and higher for BlackBerry maker Research in Motion. The gadget company, which now owns just 4% of the smartphone space, has high hopes for a turnaround. On January 30th, two new BlackBerry devices featuring the new BB10 operating system will be unveiled.
Fox Business Network's Shivani Joshi. Blake Shelton announces his 2013 tour.
Blake Shelton is finding time between seasons of The Voice to hit the road, headlining the 10 Times Crazier tour starting July 19th. And he'll be joined by special guests Jana Kramer and Easton Corbin.
I'm a little more country than that.
Shelton says he wants everyone at his shows to leave feeling like they got every penny's worth of their ticket. Sabrina Sabah, Fox News Radio.
Scientists are testing so-called brain pacemakers to stop the creeping memory loss of Alzheimer's disease. The first U.S. experiments with these implants are getting underway, but it's very involved. Surgeons have to drill holes into a patient's skull. Then they implant tiny wires that shoot out mild jolts of electricity. By constantly zapping certain brain circuits, scientists hope to bypass some of Alzheimer's damage and keep neural networks active. I'm Sal Giangrasso, Fox News Radio.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Yet another exciting edition of We the People Radio. You are joining your hosts, Elizabeth Woodward, Aaron Ryan, and Bob Martin, and our very special guest, William Kay.
And we're streaming again.
And we are streaming and chatting live. And Bob, kudos and hands off to you for multitasking better than any woman I know. Very, very good.
That is indeed a compliment.
It is.
I was going to say.
It was meant to be. Hats off to you. You do well under pressure.
All right.
Well, like we were saying last hour, we got this new streaming system in here, and to my knowledge, this was the first time it had really locked up in the last several days.
Yeah.
But it's unlocked, and that's progress. It's
that
working
is,
again.
It's bad to find out when the system locks up that there's a password,
and you don't have it,
and you don't know what it is.
Yes. Well,
bummer.
Thanks to the webmaster for pointing me in the right direction
and
on
answering
that.
The phone early on Sunday morning. That
yes,
helps.
It's a Linux based system rather than Windows or Mac. So
okay.
But it's supposed to be more bulletproof. So it's a good thing.
Great.
We think.
So we are chatting and streaming live at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Read everything about today's guest and every show that we've ever done. No excuse not to email that information out far and wide. And it's everything you will never hear in mainstream media. And we're talking today about the environmental movement. We think it's exclusive to the United States. It is so not true. And they're still the minority in creating havoc everywhere they go and teaming up with their useful idiots.
Yeah, teaming up with whoever will work for them. This is why these shows have a disclaimer at the beginning.
Yeah.
The opinions are that of the...
And we are not short on opinions,
all that,
are we?
No. And we always have people on that aren't short of opinions. But have we... William, are you back from the great silence?
Yes, I am.
Oh, right on. Okay. So where would you like to take us now?
We're going to take a voyage back 200 years.
Nice.
You recall the War of 1812?
Well, I wasn't there, but yeah. In general. Give us that first-hand report.
It actually lasted 2 years, from 1812 to 1814. And one of the central antagonists of the war was Tecumseh. Does that ring a bell?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does that bang a drum?
Yes. Good one.
Well, Tecumseh, as you know, came to fame as someone who went around butchering and slaughtering white people in Kentucky and Ohio for encroaching on Indian territory. He is also a brigadier general in the British Army. His real name was Shooting Star. His brother had visions of someday wiping out all the white people in the world, at least on North America, which to them was the world. And they put together what was known as the Shawnee Confederacy. And the purpose of the Shawnee Confederacy was to block any further westward expansion of Europeans on the North American continent. And it was not the sole cause of the War of 1812. There was also the matter of, because the Napoleonic Wars were going on, the British were seizing American ships that were trading with Europe, and they were press-ganging American sailors into the British Navy. That was also a cause of the war. There were two causes. One, that the British were giving weapons and training to the Shawnee Confederacy to block westward expansion. And secondly, that they were, you know, doing what they were on the Atlantic. As you know, at the end of the War of 1812, the Shawnee Confederacy was completely obliterated. Not totally. Just as a back lesson. During the Seven Years' War, which was in the 1760s, which was fought primarily in North America, the Shawnee Confederacy sided with the French against the British, and they lost. During the American Revolution, they sided with the British against the Americans, and they lost. During the War of 1812, they sided with the British against the Americans, and they lost. And they hung, a lot of them survived to fight in the Civil War for the South. You know, if they ever set up a casino, I will go there. Anyways, the point is that the British were using an Indian alliance to block expansion. So it shows how far back in history this goes. Like right now in Canada, we are primed for a major push into the North, where there is untold mineral resources. And there's a lot of money coming in from Asia that wants this to go forward. And the environmental movement, which is primarily driven by European interests, is forming this sort of native alliance to block this expansion. In fact, one of the things that caused the American Revolution was that Britain did not want the colonists to keep pushing further westward and northward. And they were aligning with natives to prevent that from happening. So there's a, you know, over 200-year-old history of metropolitan European powers, pretty much the European aristocracy, aligning themselves with native groups in North America, in South America, in Australia, and elsewhere to block expansion. That's the unholy alliance there.
Well,
are you there?
Yeah.
We are.
I was just kind of pondering my...
Absorbing.
My history, because I grew up on the East Coast, so I learned that history. And, you know, they hadn't... I just was thinking back, you know, they hadn't scrubbed that out of our books yet.
And, you know,
I wonder if they're still teaching that.
We had a conversation recently about how history varies depending on what side of the states you're on. You know, if you're on the West Coast, you don't hear about...
Yeah, because did you learn about Tecumseh? Is that a familiar...
Uh-uh.
Yeah. See, out here, they don't do that. Interesting.
Yeah, on the West Coast.
Well, he's a hero here. It's amazing, you know, if you really look at the history of this person was, you know, a serious race warrior, criminal, and ultimately, you know, brigadier general in the British Army. That I did not know until recently.
Wow. Bizarre. So, now, I was going to say, so as they're expanding, as you guys are looking at expanding, and we're talking business interest, correct? Going northward?
Yeah. Right now on the table, there's about $700 billion worth of mining projects that are just about ready to go or in the process of going. There's all kinds of diamond mining, platinum mining, gold mining, but this requires a lot of roads and infrastructure development, and that is what's really being obstructed right now. But, once you get north of sort of where I'm at here, it's Alaska. In fact, Alaska is more densely populated than the Canadian North. Alaska is this great metropolitan area compared to north of where I am. It is just straight bush for hundreds and hundreds of miles where there's nobody.
And so all these protests and all this big uprising is kind of designed to ultimately shut all that down?
It appears in almost every statement that they make that they're protecting Mother Earth, they're protecting Turtle Island. But of course, the natives are divided because a lot of the remote native groups are hoping to make money off of the mining and what have you, and a lot of them already have. It's basically a big shakedown operation. But there's a contingent of the native groups that want these mining projects to go ahead, and forestry projects and oil and gas projects, because they will get some money out of it. However, by empowering them, what we're basically doing is creating another level of government. And what a lot of these foreign companies do not want to see is, some confusion as to who owns the land. Nobody's going to sink a large amount of money into an area if all these other groups keep popping up saying, well, it belongs to us. No, it belongs to us. And I can assure you that the area that they're under dispute in Canada, this is ceded territory. This is surrendered territory. Now, I've done something that, .001% of North Americans have done. I've read these treaties. And with the exception of southern British Columbia, where there were no treaties, where it's kind of a legal quagmire, it is all absolutely surrender treaties. And if you get past all the verbiage and the, analysis of the treaties and what have you, and read the treaties themselves, they are quite clear that the territory, that they use the phrase, that the Indians shall hereafter cede, yield up, surrender, release all claims, titles, and privileges to this area. And they will show you a map of where the area is. But they have created this myth that somehow the Indians are entitled to be consulted and compensated for anything that goes on. What the treaties say that within the surrendered territory, there shall be reservations. But they usually represent about 1 or 2% of the land that's been surrendered. On the reservations, all the land is owned by the government. It is against the law, still against the law, for Indians to own land on a reserve.
Oh, really?
Which has done a lot to really undermine their ability to develop. So on the reserves, there is a requirement that if there's going to be any economic activity, that the natives must be, consulted and compensated. But there's this myth that has been perpetrated by a big lie that applies to the whole country. It only applies to these tiny reserves. And the treaties are quite clear there that the government has the hammer. And if the natives don't want this railway to go across their reserve or this mine in the reserve, ultimately the government can do it even if they don't want it. But the natives have this view that they somehow have a veto over any sort of mine or railway or highway in the country, and that simply is not the law. But due to the environmental movement, which of course is a family of movements, it's not just it's in terms of sociological terms, the environmental movement, the population control movement, the Aboriginal supremacist movement, these are all tightly connected organizations. But they have succeeded in convincing, the entire Aboriginal population that these treaties are either invalid or the treaties themselves actually say the natives have this veto over all resource development, or they have a right to share in the revenues from those resources. There's nothing in those treaties about that. There's nothing in those treaties about free dental care. Now, these treaties were written in the 1870s. Do you think they were giving people free dental care?
Highly doubtful.
Yeah.
You know, one of the treaties, Treaty Number 7, requires the federal government to drop off a first aid kit and a Winchester rifle at the Blackfoot chief's house. And that first aid kit has been, you know, blown up to that we've got to give them free medical care. And by the way, every treaty does say that the federal government is required to build schools on the reserves to teach them English, which is something, you know, although they complain about it now, it's something that every chief wanted in the treaties. They wanted their youth to be able to speak English. And now this is being treated as some great act of cultural genocide. In fact, there are now reserves in Canada that are unilingual. The education is unilingual Cree and unilingual Ojibwe. You know, this is something that started about 10 years ago. So now they're putting out people into our society who speak only Ojibwe. Boy, you can travel the world speaking that.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of those languages only had 2,000 words.
Don't leave
I, mean, I don't know how you say, you know, take your pickup truck to the airport in Cree. You know, it's a disaster. But there's this, you know, what's called the Aboriginal industry of Canada. You know, there's several hundred very well-paid professors and this whole bogus art market and a variety of other things. But there's thousands upon thousands of people who make their living in the Aboriginal industry in various government bureaucracies and you know, affirmative action programs and what have you. And they are just rolling back the great wheel of history. And you know, they keep talking about this genocide that occurred in Canada. According to Canadian Encyclopedia, the peak Aboriginal population pre-contact, Columbus sailing the ocean blue in 1492, was 350,000. So this is the genocide where, at the end of the day, they tripled in numbers. There's more Indians now in Canada than there ever was, you know, before Christopher Columbus. And it's not too much different to the United States, but now this has become this great political football, and the more the Aboriginal industry colonizes the universities, the more we're getting these outrageous estimates of what the pre-contact population was. Encyclopedia Britannica used to say that north of the Rio Grande, there was only 1 million Indians pre-contact. Now they've got figures, you know, several million, 10 million. They keep bumping this number up. Every retelling of the story, they keep exaggerating this number.
Kind of like Pinocchio.
What's that?
The Pinocchio factor.
Yeah, kind of like Pinocchio.
Well, it adds to this whole idea that there was some great, you know, enormous crime had been committed on them. And it's really an exaggeration. There were battles, but it was very much a two-way street. The settlers all down the road were victims of attacks by natives. You know, read the history of King Philip's Warrior. They almost, you know, they massacred one-third of all the Puritan towns, the Algonquins did on the East Coast. And that was a two-way battle. It wasn't as though, you know, white people showed up and just started hunting Indians. That was simply not the case in this country. It was so empty to begin with. There should have been no difficulty in coexisting, but battles did break out. And I am not saying that it was all evil on one side or the other, but the notion of genocide is really misleading. Their population never got wiped out. Even in places like Mexico, if you look at the Mexican population, and it's all such a dicey issue, but they're forcing it upon us. Overwhelmingly, the Mexican population is of mixed ancestry. It wasn't as though natives were exterminated. There still are millions. There's 900,000 full-blood Mayans in Mexico right now, and there's other groups like that that are still full-blood. But overwhelmingly, what they're calling the genocide was a process of intermarriage. So whereas the full-blood population has diminished in Mexico, you've got this huge population of people of mixed ancestry. That's not a genocide.
No.
That's a marriage.
That's a marriage. That's a marriage on that note.
And we certainly see that in Canada. You know, there's this huge mixed population. It's actually, you know, by some estimates, you know, 80-90% of the people who are calling themselves Aboriginal have some European ancestry. It annoys me because, you know, I'm not a racist. Most Canadians are not racists. But this whole, what's happening now is just just bringing this whole racial issue to the forefront. And what it's sounding like now, you ever recall the one drop rule?
The one drop rule?
In the pre-Civil War South, if you had one drop of African ancestry, you know, you were black and you could be a slave. So you had people who were like 1/16th black, or, you know, people who were just absolutely, their whole families were disgraced because it was pointed out that, you know, four generations ago there was an African, but they had, it was called the one drop rule. And as far as the extreme racists were concerned, if anyone anywhere in your ancestry had African and blood, you were black. End of the story. That's what we're getting to in Canada. I mean, they've recently, it's a lower court decision. It's not a Supreme Court decision, but basically there was one that handed down about a few months ago that, you know, grants a lot of benefits and what have you to non-status Indians. And these are people who are, 1/16th Native, 1/32nd Native. So we're getting to a point where if you can establish any Aboriginal ancestry, like one drop of Indian blood, you're going to be entitled to all of these benefits. And it's just a screaming injustice to everybody else.
Well, while we absorb that, we're going to come back in 2 minutes. We're going to thank our advertisers, folks that are still in business. Go figure. Many of them in business in California. That's even more of a minority. Listening to KCNR 1460 AM Community Radio for the North State.
Land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
Jones's Fort, Redding's full-line gun shop, offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's full-line gun shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fort take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fort. We'll help you find the gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have 4 full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Redding. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more.
For a free consultation or more information, call North State Tax Consultants, 530-221-0101.
Hey, it's Rachel Lane with KCNR 1460 AM inviting you to join us Sundays at 4 for The Kitchen Sink. It's a show about everything and the kitchen sink. We'll be discussing everything from parenting to science, arts, culture, music, and we'll be highlighting some very important community members right here Sundays at 4 o'clock. Please join us every Sunday 4 to 5 right here on 1460 AM and KCNR1460.com. It's The Kitchen Sink with me, Rachel Lane, on Free Fire Radio.
Can you smell it? That sweet, rich, woody smell. That smell that makes your taste buds tingle and your stomach flutter with excitement. That smell you smell is Smoked, the best taste in barbecue. Brisket is here in a sliced pub roll for lunch or dinner. Only $7.50 with a choice of side. Or how about marinated riblets with a choice of side for only $6.50? All sides are made fresh with only the best ingredients. Smoked on Airport at Rancho. 365-2085. Smoked. Ribs, chicken, and killer sides.
3 little words that will change your life forever. You have cancer. You also have choices. At Pace Cancer Center, we believe that the battle against cancer can be fought with a positive attitude, care, and excellent medicine. Dr. Pramila Dhanuka is a board-certified oncologist, and she is offering the highest level of care for cancer patients for over 10 years. At Pace, you'll discover why hundreds of local cancer survivors have chosen Pace Cancer Center for treatment. To learn more about your choices available at Pace Cancer Center, call 247-1425.
Reading School of the Arts presents Disney's The Little Mermaid at the David Marr Theater in Reading on February 1st, 2nd, and 9th. Adapted from the 2008 Disney Broadway production, this musical features the hit songs Part of Your World, She's in Love, and the Oscar-winning song Under the Sea, all with live music. Have your picture taken with your favorite character after each performance. Tickets may be purchased at the Cascade box office, online at cascadetheater.org, or by calling 243-8877.
Cattlemen's would like to announce a special all-night fundraiser and silent auction on Tuesday, January 22nd to benefit the Myers family. Come enjoy Cattlemen's on January 22nd and mention the name Elliot when you come in. And Cattlemen's Restaurant will donate a portion of the proceeds to one area family. That's January 22nd to benefit the Myers family. Mention the name Elliot when you come and enjoy Cattlemen's, and a portion of the proceeds will be donated to the Myers family.
Getting into college doesn't happen magically. You have to take the right classes now, like Algebra 2, Biology, and a Foreign Language. Learn more at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share.
And we're back. Hey, so how many people do you think watched the inauguration?
Canadian artist there, by the way.
Oh, really? Who is that?
The Guess Who.
Oh, nice. I didn't know they were Canadian.
The Guess Who.
The Guess Who. Who's on first? First what?
I don't know who's on third.
I couldn't resist.
Okay, so how many people do you think watched the inauguration?
Winnipeg, Manitoba.
What's
Yay.
That?
What's that, William?
The Guess Who. They were from Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Very
nice.
Good.
Nice.
I can remember my sister's getting one of their albums 40 years ago.
Because we're all very cool.
Let's go down memory lane anyways.
Yes.
Enough.
We're having some politically incorrect. I just want you to know you have spawned the politically incorrect chat in the chat room.
Yes, our chat room is extremely racist today.
Well, it's just politically. I'm not going to say it's racist. It's politically incorrect.
I don't think it is.
You're not as racist as the stuff that we're hearing coming out of Canadian Indians' mouths these days.
We've been
that's the biggest joke.
We've been chatting about F Troop in there.
Let's put it this way: it would have to be one of the all-time top five politically incorrect chat sessions of We the People.
And one of our chatters found Indian artifacts on his property. What did he find? Acorns and Budweiser cans?
Yeah, something like that. Like I said, we've gone to politically incorrect.
We start off pretty polite, but it goes downhill pretty quick.
What the heck? You know, why can't you have a little fun on a Sunday morning? Let's not get our
panties in a wad.
There you go. I just censored myself.
I never do. Have you noticed?
It's really hard for me.
I never do.
No, that was a nice thing to say. I was going to say something bad.
Elizabeth is the unfiltered one.
I am.
Yeah, because the stuff that comes out of her mouth isn't really that bad. I hope she never starts channeling me. It'll ruin everything.
I know. I say what everybody else is thinking.
All right. Sorry, William.
Well, we're seeing a lot of that in Canada. Like most of the major newspapers now, when they post things online, they have a comment section below that.
Oh.
And before this uprising, you know, usually there'd be 20, 30 comments posted after an article. If the article deals with Native affairs, this uprising, now there's like 500 comments, and it's nasty. Like, the truth is coming out in the comments section. In fact, Natives protested out front of one of the newspapers in Winnipeg from the Sun newspaper chain. They want them to censor their comment sections because they can't bear to hear what, you know, people are saying about them.
It's amazing. I mean, after a while, you just, you know, it's like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get tired. Oh. You get tired of being told that you're a racist if you don't agree with someone else's point of view. Or as a way and they use it as a way to censor.
Yeah.
They're taking away our First Amendment
racism.
Rights. Yeah.
Is racism something that only the white devils do?
Yep.
That's what we're hearing in Canada. I mean, you can stand there and just denounce white people, the endless perfidy of the white man that we're hearing out of this Native propaganda. If you resist it, in fact, one of the chief ideologues of the current uprising. He's a professor from the University of Victoria, probably pulling down around $200,000 a year. He was called Gerald Alfred. That was before he channeled his inner Hiawatha, and now he's calling himself Taika.
Bob just aspirated.
There's coffee all over the keyboard.
He's online and saying that anybody who denies the right of native groups to create their own states within North America is a white supremacist.
Oh wow!
And that was printed in the yeah. So he wants like all these native reserves to have their own armies, their own criminal codes, what have you. It's an absolutely nonsense, unworkable system that he's promoting, and that anybody who opposes this. And this guy's a full professor. He runs a Department of Indigenous Governance out of the University of Victoria, and he's saying things like that. He's also online of calling another Canadian journalist a racist prick. And he also threatened to kick another journalist's ass. This guy's got a PhD. Oh. He published a book from Oxford.
Oh, no,
he's one of their chief spokespeople.
Hey, you got the button.
We got to use the button. You should have seen Bob. He was like Superman.
So we know we can say crap, but that's
okay,
it.
Okay, there are some words
we're not
we
on
can't
cable.
Actually say on this show.
And we've never
the
seen
word
him.
Has appeared in a mainstream newspaper. You know, I guess I could say.
That was
would
funny.
You understand the P word? Not likely.
We've been here 2.5 years, and that's a first. Yay.
Jeez, Bob. Okay. Bob's like light. We're gonna call him, lightning fast today. That was great.
Well, you know what? I have to get a ruling on that word. We might be able to get away with it, but when in doubt, bleep it out, you know?
Well.
I didn't know that. That's pretty funny.
But,
so go ahead. Go ahead, William.
During the course of this uprising, I'm seeing more and more foul language in the mainstream media. It just shows that the tenor of the debate is just rising and rising here as it goes on. And you're seeing a lot of, headlines that have swear words in them now.
Yeah. Well, and then you have, what's her face on New Year's Eve and,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, I mean, it's like, what
yeah.
the heck? Yeah.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Bad deal.
What's her face on New Year's Eve?
Some rude comedian woman who thinks she's funny, Kathy somebody or other.
Oh, well, Kathy Griffin.
Yeah, and wow. You know, she has virtually no career, so she goes to extreme measures to create one.
Yeah, you could probably write her monologue though.
By the way, that wasn't bleeped on the stream. It was only bleeped on the over the air AM broadcast.
Oh, really?
Yes,
oh.
That's you can say whatever you want on the stream.
We've always wanted to know how that works, William. Thank you so much for that free education.
Yeah, we've been waiting 2.5 years to push that button.
We just threw away 5 minutes of the show just talking about having to bleep something. That's pretty fun. So, okay. So you guys are all, anybody who's opposing this, this whole, what's it called? Like a revolt or?
Well, it's calling itself Idle No More.
Yeah, I saw that. What does that mean? They're just not taking it anymore?
Well, a lot of people pointed out that, you know, we've been referring to the natives as rather lazy for the last 200 years, so maybe now that they're idle no more, this means like lazy no more. But it was a word concocted by Sheila McLean of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, who is also, you know, 100% European, but she's one of the intellectual leaders of this uprising. And it basically, they're not going to sit around on their couches anymore. They're going to get out in the streets and get active. They're not going to be idle anymore. That's what they were thinking when they came up with it. The movement's already been largely hijacked by the tribal dictators away from the academics.
Oh, okay.
Important point. This relates to the environmental movement. Mm-hmm. It has been a revelation to a lot of people that a lot of environmental non-government organizations are being bankrolled by wealthy philanthropists. I've been writing about that on my website for 14 years. The first thing I posted was an essay called The American Oligarchy's Economic Warfare Campaign Against British Columbians, and I just chronicled a number of local environmental groups that were getting money from the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Brothers and the Hewletts and the Packards and what have you. And this was a revelation to people. And it's even more of a revelation lately as more of the mainstream media in Canada and elsewhere clue into this. But they're way behind the times. The real power of the environmental movement and groups like are one of the real powers behind the environmental movement and groups like the Aboriginal Supremacist Movement emanates out of the universities. Every university in North America and Western Europe has environmental studies departments and ecology departments, earth sciences departments that are saturated and loaded wall to wall with full-on political activists. And this is what's called a semi-institutionalizing movement. It is a movement that has become so big it has embedded itself into the government, and it is appropriating government resources to do its bidding, which is great news for the philanthropists because it makes their dollars go all the further. This was one of their goals, and it succeeded very well. And we've certainly seen this in Canada regarding, and the United States, you know, one of the great demonic enterprises of the universe is the Ford Foundation. And in the 1960s, the Fords, who, if anyone's looked at the history of that family, you know, indubitably neo-Nazi. Read the history of Henry Ford.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's an aside. In the 1960s, they really began this push towards Aboriginal supremacism, and one of their concoctions was the Indian Studies Department at UCLA, and that is pretty much the mecca and the blueprint of Indian studies or Native studies or Aboriginal studies departments right across North America. And I went to the trouble of counting all the Native studies programs of various ilk just across Canada. There is now 216 university-level Native studies programs. You can get a BA degree in Indian pedagogy or, you know, post-colonial anti-racism. You can get a master's degree at York University in that. So right across Canada now, there's over 200 of these programs being offered, and they're basically, you know, ultra pro-native, ultra anti-white settler. We're not humans anymore now. We're just settlers. We're people who don't really belong here. We didn't rise out of the soil like they did. And most of these programs are race-based in terms of who gets to teach the program. They try to get as many Aboriginals or people who identify themselves as Aboriginals teaching those programs. The students in those classes would be overwhelmingly people who self-identify as Native, and if they actually do have Native status, their entire education will be paid for by the government. So what we've got in Canada now, and these are the real sort of bastions or the real cells of this social movement. And there's a lot more going on to that, but this is a very important aspect of it. Just as with the environmental movement, these, you know, go to any university and you will find these environmental classes. You also find environmental student societies. These are the real nests. These are the bastions, the cells of the social movement. And the heck of it all is the taxpayer is funding this.
Yeah, that's what we see down here. We see the taxpayers paying for both sides of the whole argument. They pay to sue themselves, and then they pay when they lose.
These universities?
We have to take a really quick break here because we were tardy goofing off with the bleep out button. We'll be right back with you here at We the People Radio. You heard it here first. KCNR 1460 AM, Community Radio for the North State.
My father married up your Cherokee. My mother's people were ashamed of me. The Indians said that I was white by law. The white man always called me Indian squaw.
Tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more.
For a free consultation or more information, call North State Tax Consultants, 530-221-0101.
Jones's Fort, Redding's Full Line Gun Shop offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's Full Line Gun Shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fort take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fort. We'll help you find the gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have 4 full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
Hello, this is Redding Police Chief Robert Pelletti. On January 30th at 6 p.m. in the council chambers, I am going to hold my first town hall meeting to discuss crime in our community and update the community on changes and goals setting for the Redding Police Department. I encourage the community to please attend, and after I do my update, I will answer any questions that the community has so that I can learn about your concerns as well.
That's the town hall meeting with RPD Chief Robert Pelletti at the Redding City Council Chambers, 6 p.m. on Wednesday, January 30th.
When you need prompt, dependable transportation, you can count on Redding Yellow Cab. At Redding Yellow Cab, we have a deep commitment to serve the public and provide dependable first-rate service. Whether you're heading out for a night in the town, need to get to work, or you're just running errands, relax and let Redding Yellow Cab do the driving for you. Redding Yellow Cab is your number one choice for reliable, friendly transportation with clean, comfortable cabs. Give us a call at 222-1234. That's 222-1234.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Well, that's just embarrassing. To be known as Idiot America.
I like it. Bob said that's part of a two-parter. We have to wait till the next break to find out.
And he isn't going to give us any clues.
The rest of the story. All right, William, talk fast.
Okay.
We're coming into the home stretch. We still have to squeeze in another break.
Home stretch. One of the main points of confusion is that many people view the capital T, capital M, the movement, environmental movement and its allies, as being a left-wing movement, as to being somehow descendant from the socialist, communist, Marxist scene. That is completely inaccurate. This is a movement that arises out of the fascist movement. Now, supporting, or I should say opposing this, or pointing this out, does not mean that you're supporting socialism or communism by calling the environmental movement fascist. The correct approach is to oppose both neo-fascism and socialism, but it's also important to point out that those two are quite distinct phenomena. The actual real radical left is pretty much a dead phenomenon in the Western world, whereas the fascist movement is on the doorsteps of power. And if you look at people like Obama, they're actually in power. But the environmental movement, this is a movement indubitably of the extreme right. People confuse the extreme right of today with various aspects of old versions of the right. In 1941, you know, between the gates of Moscow and the white cliffs of Dover, every European country was under the rule of a fascist dictator. There were about 7 or 8 million Europeans who brandished membership in fascist political parties. Contrary to popular opinion, there was no great purge after World War II. Many of those people laid low for a few years, and they began to reorganize. And what they reorganized into was the environmental movement. If you know the history of fascism, you'll realize an extremely green movement. They all used terms like ecology. They were into conservation, wilderness preservation. All the leading neo-Nazis and fascists were great promoters of these things. That much they did not change. But many, they dropped, certainly, when the fascist movement reorganized, there was always this sort of fringe that couldn't let go of the swastikas and couldn't let go of the crude anti-Semitism. But they were very much marginalized and ghettoized. The mainstream of the neo-fascist movement pretty much reconstituted itself into what we now call the International Environmental Movement. And its objective is to impose dictatorial kinds of government where there's very, very regulated forms of capitalism. They're not going to completely abolish private property, as some people think, but they are going to switch to a highly regulated system, and they are going to greatly restrict land development into the metropolitan areas, and the hinterlands are going to be desiccated and let to wither up and dry. That is the agenda that we're looking at now. And one of the key features of how fascism takes power is through a steady recruitment of the state elite and the capturing of state institutions. This isn't the unwashed mob sweeping the Bastille. Many European governments were taken over by fascist political parties that just selectively recruited police chiefs and judges and professors, and by the time they had sufficient grasp of the state machinery, it was too late for most people to realize. When we see, like in the United States right now, a lot of the universities are completely out of the control of the elected legislatures. These legislatures give all kinds of money to these universities, but somehow it's considered completely inappropriate for them to interfere with academic freedom. And out of these universities, there's this well-coordinated political agenda being broadcast, and they're indoctrinating the youth into this agenda, even though the vast majority of the public don't agree with this agenda, and they're paying for it. And we're seeing, you also see a lot of the agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency. They're completely out of the control of the American public. That is a fascist system, where the democratic institutions get marginalized. And it's not as though there are no people influencing these government bureaucracies. Other groups are. But your Senate and your Congresses and your state legislatures are becoming these mere talking shops. Even the politicians don't even know what's going on in these state bureaucracies. That's fascism. It is the pounding of a wedge between the elected representatives and the government machinery itself. And we're seeing it big time in Canada now when we can't get the police to, you know, arrest people that are blocking main rail lines and highways like that. And there's a great deal of public fury, just a realization that someone has got there ahead of us. And that at the very elite levels of these police departments, there are political agents, there are actors who are influencing it. And the rank and file police will just do what they're told. So government agency by government agency are being stripped away from the elected representatives and being circled around other elements within the society. That is a slow, creeping process of fascist takeover.
Yeah, and we're much of it is being called regionalism, which we just super love. So, okay, we've got to squeeze in one more break here, and then we'll come right back, and we will tie up this hour with William Kay. Hang in there. You're at KCNR 1460 AM, Community Radio for the North State.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind. From the north and south and east.
Have you ever served in the armed forces? Were you in the National Guard or a reservist who deployed on active duty? Are you in need of housing, or do you know of a veteran who needs housing? As a veteran, you should know that there are services available for you. drop by the Veterans Housing and Resource Fair on Wednesday, January 30th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Veterans Hall on Yuba Street in Reading. There will be food and refreshments and one-on-one information. The more veterans who know about these services, the fewer will be left behind. We need your help to get the word out. If we can identify 300 veterans who are couch surfing or staying with friends or family or who are homeless, additional housing assistance will be made available for veterans in Shasta County. So we're counting on you to be at the Veterans Hall for the Veterans Housing and Resource Fair on Wednesday, January 30th.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar.
Join me, Paul Preston, Fridays 10 to 11 a.m. for Agenda 21 Radio. Right here on Free Fire Radio 1460 KCNR.
Hello. At Hilltop Medical Clinic, we're here when you need us. No appointments are necessary. This gives us a unique picture of the health and the infections that are circulating in our community. Want to know if influenza has arrived in Reading? Then like our Hilltop Medical Clinic Facebook page or go to our website at hilltopmedicalclinic.com. Awareness is one of the best ways to protect the health of your family and children. Hilltop Medical Clinics, 221-1565 or 246-4629.
So, Chris, second Tuesday in February is at Mazatlan's.
I'm packed and ready to leave.
Not in Mazatlan, at Mazatlan Grill Mexican Restaurant.
I was looking forward to a vacation in Mexico.
Won't you join us Tuesday, February 12th at Mazatlan Grill on Hilltop Drive for some great Mexican food and good company as Mazatlan Grill donates a percentage of their proceeds to Haven Humane Society. It's all about helping the animals and an evening out with friends.
I still need a vacation.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Don't want to be a Canadian idiot. Don't want to be some bear's will and hockey nuts. And do I look like some frostbitten hose head? I never learned my alphabet from A to Z.
Oh, that's great. I get it. So you're going to do the Weird Al Yankovic part.
That's
second half.
Fun.
Super fun. Based off American Idiot, yes.
Yeah. I love
it. Just real quickly, just wanted to let the folks in this area know that tomorrow night at the Reading Tea Party, 6 o'clock, 2570 South Bonneview Road at the Destiny Fellowship Church, where we meet every Monday night and have for about 3 years, we will be having Mike Stewart speaking to us. He is actually a really solid figure in the Shasta County area. He was a colonel in the Army, former principal and superintendent, principal of Enterprise High School, superintendent of the Enterprise High School District. He does live in Reading. He is a local expert on education and gun issues when it comes to the schools. And he's got some really strong feelings about gun control, and we can't wait to hear about that. So if you are tuned into the Second Amendment, if you attended any rally anywhere in the near Shasta County area, join us tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Destiny Fellowship Church, because we will continue that thread of discussion.
Nice. Okay, so there's our commercial announcement. Thank you, Brenda, for working on that this morning. She was lining that up. We were hoping to be able to announce that, but I had the wrong phone number for him. Oopsie.
Go, Brenda.
Go, Brenda. Okay. Let's see. T-minus five and counting.
So, William, hockey season opened yesterday.
Hit it, William.
I actually don't follow hockey.
Good for you. Just say no to sports. It's just too time-consuming.
Well, yeah, for the most part, yeah, I don't. You can get addicted to those things and
exactly.
Spending your whole life watching television, which I don't do.
He's the one Canadian who's not excited about it. The hockey season had been delayed for like 3 months because of a lockout, but it finally got underway yesterday.
Oh, you guys had that too? Oh, what the heck?
Yeah, well, they call it the National Hockey League, but it's actually international. Yeah, it was huge news here. A lot of people were suffering greatly because of this, because there are a lot of people who are obsessed with hockey. It is not technically the national sport. The national sport is lacrosse, because we must honor the Aboriginals. But in reality, this is hockey country, board to board. No doubt about that.
Nice. Okay, so we were talking about environmental fascism, which we love to talk about, and how that tangles up with the... Now, okay, so you keep calling them aboriginal, so that's a good thing, or...
Okay,
well,
as
I say, in Canada, whatever word we apply to these people within 3 years becomes considered
racist.
To be a racist epithet.
So what's the difference between aborigines and aboriginals?
Well, aborigines are from Australia. That's what they call the people who were there
just
when
checking.
We arrived. Basically, it means your ancestors were there a long time. Of course, I'd like to call them Beringians because... They arrived over the Bering Strait. During the last ice age, 15,000 years ago, because the water levels were so low, because so much water was trapped in ice, off the coast of the Pacific Ocean, there were great masses of land, and you could travel from Asia to North America. And that is when these people migrated. You see, they're immigrants. The Aboriginals, the Indians, they immigrated here. And although they don't like that, they believe that the Creator put them on the back of Turtle Island, and that they were always here, and they hate to hear the fact they too had migrated here from another place. But there was, and there is no Atlantis beneath the Atlantic Ocean, but there is a buried continent beneath the Pacific Ocean called Beringia, which appears during ice ages. And countries like, places like Hawaii are giant islands, because the sea level could be as much as 600 feet lower than it is now. And you can walk from China to Washington State.
Wow. Well,
and that buried continent is
good geography
known
today.
By geologists as Beringia. Anyway, that's where they're from. They came from Asia.
Okay.
So technically, you know, they're not aboriginals. They didn't evolve here as a separate species. Although I hate to hear it, when they created the National Museum in Ottawa for Aboriginal people, Aboriginal pressure made them eliminate all references to that. And now the official line is that the Creator put them here on North America.
And is your history all being rewritten to reflect all this?
Every word.
Of course.
In fact, they're coming up with written Aboriginal languages for people who had no writing.
Oh.
And they are teaching their kids in school how to write in Eskimo, not that they use that word anymore, even though these people had no written languages. It is an absolutely preposterous bit of revisionism. But I think we're getting near the top of the hour. I want to boost the website.
Yes, please.
www.ecofascism.com or Google the words environmentalism is fascism. Or any word like that. I pretty much own those phrases and those words. And it's important for people. And America is going through a similar process. America has vast natural resources, timber, mine, oil, and gas, that you are not being allowed access to. Half of the land west of Chicago was owned by the U.S. federal government. You know, it's a no-brainer. You want the economy to boom, throw that land open for development.
Thank you, William K.
Unprecedented boom.
Right on.
Thanks a lot, William.
Boom.
Thanks, William.
Boom.
Time to go boom now. Casey and Irish Shasta Redding.
Fox News Radio. I'm Sal Chiangrasso. 4 more years began today as President Obama was sworn in to his second term as president. Reporting live from Washington, Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz.
In a low-key ceremony in the White House Blue Room, Chief Justice John Roberts administered the oath of office as required by the Constitution on January 20th.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Thank you so much.
First Lady Michelle Obama held her family's Bible for the oath. Earlier in the day, Vice President Biden took his oath at the VP residence, and both men laid a wreath at the Arlington Cemetery Tomb of the Unknowns. Tonight, the President and Vice President attend a candlelight reception at the National Building Museum. Sal?
Mike, the President will take the oath again tomorrow during a public swearing-in at the Capitol before hundreds of thousands of people. He will also give his inaugural address, followed by the traditional parade and the evening inaugural balls. And in the President's speech...
He's going to talk about our political system doesn't require us to resolve all our disputes.